Everything's gray. Fucking gray. Except there's no God. That's black and white.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with our friend Mark Baker about his experiences being an atheist who's also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he also asks us 5 questions.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined by my co-hosts, Nick and Molly Glover.
Hey!
Hello.
And we are joined by our guest this evening, Mark Baker. Hi, Mark. How
Hello.
You doing?
Good evening. I'm doing well.
Great. So Mark is here because we wanted to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, Mark, you just celebrated how many years?
6.
6 years. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yay!
It's
yeah.
a long time between drinks.
It is a long time. So you're ready for your next one anytime. Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
Jesus Christ, Tim.
No. Are you buying?
Oh, it's not that you had a problem. You're just really frugal.
Right. Oh, these are tough economic times.
Yeah. You know, you can have any drink we have in the house. I really mean that.
If you want, you have like some cooking sherry.
I know. It's a well. We might have some cooking sherry. Yeah. Anyway, so we wanted to talk to you, Mark, because you're a longtime listener of the show. We actually read your answers on our show about a month and a half ago.
Yay.
They were Mark Baker's answers.
Very good, Molly. Very good.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, and AA, one of the big things about AA is there's a big God component to AA, and I wanted to know what it's like to be in AA and be an atheist. How do you deal with that?
Well, what's interesting is that when I went into AA originally, I don't think... I wasn't as militant about my atheism. I didn't think about it very much, mm-hmm. but AA, I think, really pushed me into really kind of rejecting, because I saw just how poisoned I felt AA was by the God thing, the spirituality, whatnot. It just seemed so not important to the matter at hand, which was to not drink,
mm-hmm.
and they tied it to this other whole thing that, you know, they make it a spiritual problem, and that's why you drink, which
right.
is... as we know, utter nonsense.
It doesn't help you get better either.
No, it really doesn't.
Giving things up to God means
you're not... Not that part of it, at least. Say.
Whenever people give problems over to God, they're not taking personal responsibility for what's going on
right.
with the problem.
Absolutely.
That's, yeah.
Well, and isn't that... not being an alcoholic, I mean, one of the steps are... What are the steps that relate to God?
Like half can of them are. I've got them right here.
Oh,
sweet. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives become unmanageable.
Yeah, it's kind of...
I mean, then came to believe in a greater power than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Yeah,
then made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
Boy.
Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Admitted to God and to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character and then humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings, make a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends.
That's not...
Made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them
Are
or
you
others.
All of them or just the God ones?
Just all of them.
All right.
Continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit to it, and... 11 is sought the prayer and meditation to improve our consciousness, our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry them out. And then 12 is have had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs.
It's like a pyramid scheme.
half the steps are about not taking responsibility and thanking a fictional being, you know, for help.
Right, and then that really is sort of was my whole problem with it, you know. It made me realize that since I didn't believe in a higher power, you know, a lot of this stuff means I got to take care of this myself, mm-hmm. or with the help of other humans.
Right.
Right.
You know, and I did, I had a lot of help, and I had really good people in AA who were not necessarily religious. couple of Buddhists here and there, and some people who, you know, may have been, you know, Christian or whatnot, but weren't religious about it.
They're sure. Kind of lapsed
or... Yeah, the problem, you know, even if they weren't, they said the problem is alcohol.
Yeah.
You're not spiritually sick. Yeah. You're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You have a physical / mental thing going right. on, and God doesn't really play a factor in this.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I didn't realize until just this moment that the final step requires you to have a spiritual awakening.
Yeah.
And I can see how that, I mean, for if you don't feel like, I don't consider myself a spiritual person at all, so I don't know that I could have a spiritual awakening regardless of whether or not I had managed to beat this addiction.
I mean, they might make it less religious and say like an epiphany, right. an awakening, an eye-opening, you know, a coming to. But I mean, if you're a religious person, chances are you're going to associate that feeling and that thing with the presence of deities.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't apply to some people.
So did that make it more difficult for you in the outset, the fact that you were being asked to kind of?
Because I actually did go through the whole 12-step thing, mm-hmm. you know, like there's a third-step prayer and I think a seventh-step prayer. But all the prayers, I think, that you basically say, you know, God, I need help. Help me out here, throw me a bone. So I actually did those things, knowing and not believing that there was anyone listening to it.
Was it more like an internal meditative thing, like a mantra?
The guy that I went through the 12 steps with was just like, just do it. You don't have to believe it. Just do it, go through it, be done with it.
Just wrote.
Right. His thing is, you know, after I kind of came out of it, it takes a while to get... out of this fog of recovery, mm-hmm. you know, and probably a year after I'd kind of cleaned up, he says, you know, the 12 steps are really kind of busy work. There's something to give you an occupation while you're trying to sort out the fact that it's really just the drinking.
We had that for when I was in the hospital for anorexia. They did the same kind of thing where we had like a workbook we had to go through, and it was busy. It was literally worksheets.
Oh, crazy crafts.
No, well, the crazy crafts is that's occupational therapy. This is more like it was a worksheet where you had to fill it out every day, and it was things like just asking questions about your body and eating and stuff. And so it really made me it reminds me of that, where it was like I thought it was all bullshit, but I still had to just keep doing it. And I can't say it didn't help, even though it was rote, you know?
Right. I mean, and I'll agree with that. I think I think going through that stuff did help me, especially when you kind of have to, you know, when you make your fourth step inventory, you know, when you make your amends to people, like there's a lot of people, you mess up their lives just by being in them as an active alcoholic. So some of this stuff is actually really good to have, you know, I won't deny that. But again, there's a lot of crap attached to it that it just seems mm-hmm. superfluous.
So what I'm going to do, we're doing this kind of different. We're doing a two-parter because we have another friend who's also an alcoholic who's going to talk about a different part of AA. But he's joining us and listening in, and he's got something to add. So, Zach, you wanted to say something at this point.
I was just going to interject when Mark was talking about the way he was guided along those steps. There's a few different schools of thought on the way you progress through the steps, and in some ways, some people think of it as kind of a cafeteria style thing, and you can kind of jump around between the steps or take which ones you like and leave some of them. Then there are other people, like maybe from the old guard, a traditionalist that say, no, you have to do every one, and you have to go through them in the right order.
And the order is important.
And the order is magic.
Yes.
It's like a magic spell.
Yes, and it's very much like certain organized religions and the varieties within mm-hmm. organized religions.
Sure.
That, like, you know the term cafeteria Catholic?
Yeah.
Yeah. My brother's a cafeteria Catholic.
Okay. So it's, I bet it's like different groups, different people leading it, different sponsors. I mean, they all have their
Absolutely.
Own...
Absolutely. Every group has got a different flavor, and Minneapolis has a huge recovery community, so there's literally hundreds of meetings every night in the metro area.
That's an entire group of people that I just don't... I wouldn't know that we have a huge recovery community.
Actually, and that doesn't surprise me. They have an AA meeting every day at Convergence. They have one, and...
I've been to it.
Yeah.
A couple times.
And so, like, that, I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all that we would... Plus, I mean, when you think about it, like, we have a lot of punks... have a lot of, we have, I mean, like, drinking is definitely something that happens here, you know, on a large scale. I mean, sure. Like, the majority of what outings are bars.
I have friends that I frequently, you know, I don't know who's an alcoholic and who's not. That's not my business. I mean,
it's kind of part of what's hard about it. It's hard to know.
There are friends that I frequently refer to as having a bad relationship with alcohol.
There you go.
Which, because I really feel like their relationship with alcohol is unhealthy. Whether or not that makes them an alcoholic or just somebody who's, you know, but I wanted to actually come back to something, which is, to me, especially when you look at today, we're recording, and they were just having hearings at the Minnesota State Legislature about gay marriage. And, of course, they had a whole bunch of people speaking in support of it and a bunch of people speaking against it. And all the people speaking against it were speaking from a religious point of view. And there are times where I view religion as an addiction.
Sure.
Sure, absolutely.
As people just, I think, damaging their lives because they're addicted to the idea of religion, and damaging other people's lives in the case of gay marriage.
There are a lot of people who, when you're talking about recovery or like addiction therapy, think that the steps of AA are, it's a form of substitution. You're substituting a habit.
Meetings.
Meetings, coffee, cigarettes,
God.
Those people, God, for your addiction to alcohol. It's substitution. It's like methadone.
Which doesn't mean it doesn't work.
No,
lot of times people aren't addressing the root cause, and I saw this at the anorexia camp too. People who aren't addressing the root cause of why you're doing it, they're just trying to feed you and get you out so that you gain enough weight that they can medically not worry about you anymore, but they're not addressing what the problem is.
I had a professor in college in an addiction class talking about specifically alcohol recovery, saying that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous will tell you their statistics and their efficacy rate, and if you go to just about any other form of therapy or recovery, including people that don't pick that method, the common factor with people who succeed is the genuine desire to be healed, to fix yourself.
Right.
And so it's like, if Alcoholics Anonymous works for you, it's part of the program's doing, but if you don't want to fix yourself, Alcoholics Anonymous isn't going to succeed for you.
No, and I absolutely believe that. You know, that's kind of the deal when you make a decision in AA. You know, you make your decision that you're going to stop drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really, I think, what it boils down to. Like, are you serious about that or not really? I've got a roommate who's, you know, got a big problem with alcohol. He checked himself into a detox unit a week and a half ago, and he was drunk 48 hours after he came back home. Which to me is mind blowing. Relapse is not part of my story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I finally said I've had enough of this, I stopped and I haven't gone back since.
Sure.
And I know that that's not super common.
No.
But it's not that. It's not.
But
that it's,
you know, for me, it was the end. Like, I was, you know, there. I knew that that was all there was to it. I had to stop. But I didn't know how to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where AA and, you know, people helped out. But it came from that moment, like, something's got to end.
Yeah, and one thing you said to me when we were talking about doing this podcast is, you said, I'm just going back to the atheism piece of it, you said that actually being an AA made you more of an atheist.
Oh, yeah.
Because the God thing, they kept talking about the God thing, and that just wasn't clicking with you.
It chased you off.
Well, there's that, and this is anecdotal, but it always seemed to me in the meetings that the people who spouted the most talk about God were the people who were chronic relapsers.
Oh.
You know, like, you go into, I used to volunteer at the 1800 Chicago meeting, which is a detox unit, and it's pretty gritty in there. And, you know, all those guys are less than 24 hours sober, but they're talking about what a great contact they have with God. I'm like, man, what you need is to have less contact with booze.
Yeah.
It's really simple, you know? It's not a God thing, it's an alcohol thing, and therein is the problem.
I feel like one of the things that I find really interesting is when people do this whole, like, the whole, like, oh, you know, like, I'm sick, I got a sickness and I'm afflicted and God needs to take it away from me.
Yeah.
And do you feel like those were the people that, like, the people that had that whole religious thing were more of a, like, I'm just praying and praying to God to come take this away. Like,
I'm broken.
I'm flawed. Yeah, because I think, have you seen the South Park episode where Stan's dad is an alcoholic or decides he's an alcoholic?
I have not.
It's I think you would like it. We'll link to it because in the show notes, because it's very much all, like, I'm sick, like I have a disease. And it's like, you don't have a disease, stop drinking. And he's like, no, well, it's not my fault, Stan, I mean, it's not my fault.
There's two very strong camps. They're very divided as to, you know, people that are in recovery or not that think alcoholism is a disease and they treat it as such. And then there are people that think that's bullshit and the other group think that's bullshit. I mean, it's...
I feel like it's a disorder.
Well,
in my experience being involved with recovery, the more religious a person is, the more likely they are to deny that it is a disease.
Hmm.
The very religious, very Christian people are like, no, it's not a disease.
It's a spiritual malady.
And it's the more reasonable people that are less religious are more willing to acknowledge
a medical component.
For me, I make such a strong distinction between disease and disorder, and maybe it's because of anorexia and bipolar disorder and being hospitalized for both, is the idea that like a disease is like pneumonia. Like a disease is something that you take a pill and it goes away. A disorder is a way that your brain thinks that you can't, that you need to get around or fix in that sense.
Sure.
To me, disease implies like an affliction that's a sickness that you can measure in the blood or something. And like, and disorders are things that are more amorphous and more difficult to pin down and can't be physically proven.
Well, it's why someone drinks too much or is not someone who can handle themselves when they're drinking. The causes for that are myriad. It can be a genetic, predisposition. It can be an entirely mental thing where they're, you know, the reasons they're drinking can be plenty and very different. And I think that might figure into that too. I don't know.
So since you've recovered and you've been more out as an atheist, I'm assuming, and more solid in it.
Oh, sure.
Do you find any... Have you talked about that when you volunteer at meetings? Have you made that become part of your recovery story now?
Yeah. You know, to be honest, I don't go to very many meetings. In the last, 2 years, I've probably been to half a dozen tops.
Probably good. I mean,
which, just fine. You know, I go to meetings and I typically get frustrated because I just listen to a lot of prattle. I can't handle the God thing because to me it's like going to church.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You guys ever have to go to church with a family function or anything? You know, you sit there and you're just kind of thinking, this is sort of bullshit.
You try not to roll your eyes as hard as you can.
Right. You should be anywhere else.
Right. You know, and I understand I do have something that's valuable because I can help people who feel the same way I do. But it's really hard for me to sit there and listen to that and then try to kind of hold back the tide because that's certainly not a popular opinion in a regular AA.
It's not a popular opinion anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. Have you attempted to go to more, like, are there chapters of AA that have a more atheist or at least agnostic bent that you could maybe try to volunteer at?
Not in, like, I mean, I think,
I think we might be talking,
about that next week, next episode, but, you know, most AA will say this is a spiritual thing.
So you just get...
basically just are told,
sit down and
be quiet.
Interesting. That seems so counterintuitive. Yeah. Here's someone who never relapsed, is 6 years recovered, and wants to talk about how for them there wasn't any God and there was no surrendering to a higher power because there is no higher power and he just did it on his own and they don't want to hear it. That sounds terrible.
Molly, he did those steps and he was fixed, so clearly the spiritual part works.
Oh, just because you don't believe in it, Jesus believes in you, Mark.
Right, exactly. I mean,
thank God for that, right?
I thank God every day for that.
Going back to your discussion, even though it's anecdotal, when I think about it, about the idea that if you give up control over your own behavior to a higher power, it becomes easier to relapse, I think. Because if you have to take responsibility for your own choices rather than give responsibility to God for those choices, then it's a lot easier to go, well, the relapse isn't, God failed me, or whatever you say, instead of... I failed myself.
I wasn't trying hard enough to be with God.
To get that. It's your failure.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still your failure, but it's not your failure because you drank. It's your failure because God.
It makes me think of how, I suppose it still happens. People be like, oh, well, he raped and murdered all those girls because he had a demon in him. It wasn't, you know, my son couldn't have done those things. Oh. It was a demon. And so the idea of it being a spiritual malady like that, it sounds so antiquated to me, because that's basically what you're saying. You're saying it's a demon. You're saying that you have some kind of amorphous soul sickness that it makes you be an asshole to people all the time.
I think I have that.
I know you have that, honey. It's okay.
Yeah.
You don't even need alcohol. No. Yeah, you can just do it all on your own.
That's so indoctrinating. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's all break you down, really tear you apart, and then rebuild you in their image.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're going to move on to the five questions here really quickly, but I think some of it has to be associated with the time at which AA happened.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
You know, because what?
Was it the 30s?
It's 40s. 40s? 30s?
The prototypical version started in the early 20s around like the big huge stock market.
That was Bill W.
Yeah, that was Bill W. But then its modern form, yeah, didn't come out until around like the late 30s, early 40s.
Okay. But I mean, still religion much more prevalent in that society. I mean, I'm not saying it's not prevalent in this society, but I think it becomes, because it's part of everybody's life, it may have something to do with why it became part of AA.
Well, and the temperance movement was all about that demon rum and the devil of alcohol, for sure.
Well, spirits.
Yeah. There you go.
So we got to move on to five questions.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we do have a historical precedent that if you've already answered the five questions on our podcast, and while you were not on the podcast, we read your answers on the podcast, so that counts.
It does.
And that means that you are required to ask us five questions, and we are required to answer them.
Legally required.
So I hope you prepared five questions.
I have five questions, one of which is going to have long responses, so I may have to save that. I don't know.
That's all right.
That's all right. It's our podcast.
We're going to go with number one. What would it take for you to become a believer?
You know, Molly and I have had this conversation.
We've had this conversation a lot.
And we've had this conversation a few times. And I would have to see... I don't think anything. I mean, I can't say nothing, because I feel like... I try to have... consider things like scientifically and logically. And so if that were to exist, I should be able to be, I don't know, open to the possibility of that bullshit. But like, it would have to be fucking substantial enough that I am convinced that I'm not just crazy.
Mm-hmm. I was hospitalized for hallucinations, both auditory and visual, so I'm going to say nothing, because nothing would be able to convince me that I wasn't going crazy, or even if Nick, who's always been my touchstone, was like, no, I'm seeing it too, even then I'd be like, I don't know. Like, I would just assume that there was something else. I would never assume God.
You know, it would be apocalypse. Like raining blood, talking insects,
four
horsemen. Like, I'd have to see all that shit that was,
Jesus,
like, any, something prophesied, all that come true, and have to, like, live in that world for a year or two, in that post-apocalyptic, like, biblical apocalypse world.
Demonstrable omnipotence.
Okay.
Demonstrable omnipotence might help.
I think, the question, there are two parts to this question. What would it take for me to believe in a Muslim, Hindu, any kind of God like that? There's nothing, because that God doesn't exist. If there is a higher power, there's no fucking way it's that.
Sure.
How would we humans have the slightest fucking clue what God's got? How would I believe in a higher power? Well, I suppose if I die and there was something beyond death.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that would convince me.
Okay, an afterlife.
Okay. Yeah.
Any afterlife would
only one way to find out, Tim.
Yeah.
Let's do it now! aside from that, it would have to be something on a global scale where everybody saw the same thing.
Yeah.
Even then, I would have a really hard time believing it wasn't some kind of cataclysmic.
Not just everybody saw the same thing, but it's caught on video, it's caught on audio. Yeah. You know, there's just absolutely no way to deny that this supernatural thing happened.
So the short answer for all of us would be extraordinary proof.
All right.
Extraordinary claims.
I think that's what it would require.
Extraordinary proof.
Yes.
Yeah. But it might be extraterrestrials.
Yeah, right.
See, that's what I'm saying. I would believe in aliens over God a million times over. I would believe aliens versus God. For reals.
Sufficiently word. Advanced technology.
All right, yeah.
Fair
yeah.
answer.
Yeah.
All right, two. Since we're, I think it's Lent, maybe, right now.
It is Lent,
if
yes.
you had to give up a geeky hobby, what would it be?
What?
Forever?
If I had to?
Fuck you.
Give up forever?
Give up a geeky hobby
for Lent.
No, you know what?
I would say forever.
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 A geeky hobby I would give up forever.
Sacrifice it.
Because Lent, the 40
and,
days.
And I'm guessing like we can't pick like a bullshit hobby that we don't really care about. You're asking us to like...
your geeky
you're asking
hobbies.
Us to kill a darling.
Yes.
Okay.
Abraham sacrificed Abraham. Your geeky son.
Computer yep. games.
Mm.
I would give up because I spend... If I start playing computer games, I waste fuck tons of time anyway just playing the computer game, and then I'll, like, look later. You know, like, on the iPad, it's got the little apps, and they'll tell you how many hours you've played the game. And, like, I'm playing Temple Run 2 right now, and because it's an Indiana Jones game,
it's
right?
True,
it's a little
it
Indiana Jones, yeah. and he's running. It's like I'm fucking playing Indiana Jones. And if I look at how many hours I've spent playing that game, trying to unlock every little thing, it just
well,
it makes me sad.
You could have been an archaeologist yourself.
I could have gone to school. So I'm going to say computer games. I would give it up.
Molly?
Give
me more time to think.
I'm going to...
I talked for a long time.
Boy, I guess I would have to say I would give up taking online... IQ tests. That's pretty dorky, right? Like, I do that a lot.
But it has to be online tests in general.
Okay,
like, your
so
autism
I give up,
spectrum ones
okay,
and
I
all
those.
Okay,
I take those a lot. I would give up taking online quizzes, like, because I'm a big fan. Not like Cosmo, what kind of penis guy do you want? Not like, I mean, like actual, like...
Did you say what kind of penis guy?
I want to know the answer to that.
Which must read
Cosmo. Really want to know that.
Wow. You know, one. I think miniatures and miniature terrain. It's fun, and I really like doing it, and I get a great sense of accomplishment from it, but at the same time, it's resource and more so time exhaustive. Like, it really takes up a lot of time. And,
Do you paint your miniatures?
I for, like, D&D and stuff like that, but usually we use, like, pre-bought, pre-painted, the miniature random pack stuff.
If I say I give up board games, do I get a new job?
No.
Never mind. Scratch that.
Yeah, I'd give that up because it would give me more time for other stuff, and I haven't done much with it lately. So I feel like if I gave it up right now, I wouldn't miss it very much.
That's a good
but
point.
But if I ever got the bug and wanted to come back to it, it might be frustrating.
I'd miss computer games.
Yeah.
But
oh,
I
yeah.
would have
that's
so much
question.
Time to do it.
Hey, well, that's what console games are
I'd
for.
I'd miss online tests.
There you go.
So...
Number three, what's your favorite Dreg song?
Oh my god, my favorite Dreg song!
Does it have to be an original Dreg song?
No, original or a cover.
Wagon
Married
Wheel.
To a Mermaid. You said Wagon Wheel?
Yeah.
I like that one too.
My favorite actually is Zombie Apocalypse at Christmas. Because I think the tune's awesome and I love the way it all...
No, I gotta go back. I gotta go back.
And because I wrote it and it's just my favorite,
sure.
one of my favorite pieces of comedy writing.
It's, I mean, if your band... I had a roommate that was in a band. He said, if your band that you're in isn't your favorite band and your one of your songs isn't like your favorite song, then why are you in a band? I always thought that was great. I mean...
I can't just pick one. I'm also gonna say Pills of White Mercury.
That's
a good one.
For Wagon Wheel, man, like... So I have it on the iPod that we keep in the car, and I will skip that song sometimes because there's a specific feeling I get when I hear Wagon Wheel, because the start of every day at the Renaissance Festival, I would hear that song when we'd be like milling about or getting coffee or whatever,
yeah.
and like we're not in season right now, and I don't want to like be missing and longing for being out at festival, it makes me a little sad.
That's exactly the reason
and
I
it,
like to listen to it.
Yeah, and it kind of is like a like super pussy thing to say or whatever, but I don't know. That song, especially like the Dregs rendering of it, I makes me miss Renaissance Festival
yeah,
a lot, and
sure.
that's weird to say.
Alright.
Word. I'm kind of a Fields of Atherai guy myself.
Oh, yeah. It's a good version.
That has, like, almost brought me to tears. Like,
yeah.
Just, like, driving down the road. I'm like, oh, this is good. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm going to answer my own question.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Number four, bacon or donuts?
Well,
bacon.
I mean...
Bacon.
Bacon.
Do I get to include, like, turkey bacon?
Sure.
Then turkey bacon.
Donuts
wait,
are awesome.
No, hold on, wait. Donuts. I forgot that there's like so many kinds of donuts.
Mini donuts, Molly.
Oh, I gotta go donuts.
Yeah, right. She loves mini donuts. I don't understand donuts. It's deep fried air. They don't have any appeal to me.
Jelly filled donuts.
What else?
Jelly filled donuts with sugar.
I love donuts, but you know, if you put a plate of bacon and a plate of donuts next to me and said you can only eat one of these, it would be bacon.
See, you know, that's not fair because the part of my brain that is like don't eat things that are all fat and no protein is like well we should eat that bacon. That's the smarter choice. But my heart's in donuts, Tim.
This is not. There's no wrong answer to this.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you sure? What's my grade?
No, you're okay.
Yes.
I'm with you. Yeah. We eat donuts together.
All right.
Good turkey bacon is really good. Like yeah,
that's
I love bacon.
Mm. All right. Last question. What geek would you most like to have as a guest on Geeks Without God?
Oh.
Ooh. Dream guest.
Will Wheaton.
You stole mine, you bitch.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if he's an atheist or not, but I'm pretty sure he is.
He is, and he's out.
He is?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, sweet.
Apparently, he's just
and I met him last year.
The nice, or, yeah, I think...
He is the nicest.
He's the nicest guy ever. And
his Twitter profile just says, I'm just this guy, you know? Which I think is so great, because it's like, I mean,
it kind of sums it up.
Will Wheaton would be good. I'm going to say Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, yeah.
I know he doesn't say he's an atheist, but he is.
The only atheist is a scientist?
He's at least he's at least an agnostic, and I think that he doesn't say he's an atheist because... For him, science is the most important thing, and he doesn't want to have people not listen to him because he's also an atheist. But Neil deGrasse Tyson would just
Bill Nye.
Yeah, I was thinking like second choice, Bill Nye the science guy.
Because he's kind of more of a dick than Neil deGrasse Tyson is. Like he'd be fun.
I would very very much like to have Jennifer Lawrence on, who I don't know if she's an atheist or not, but I'm thinking more geek. Side of things, like, or I would also, I like, since it's a comedy podcast, and Lena Dunham, would be a good guest.
Shit, I'm having an actor name.
Help.
Fucking Harry Potter.
Oh, Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe.
He's out, too.
Yeah, he's...
Fucking Harry Potter.
Yeah, he's verbally, you know, very outgoing about his atheism. Very outspoken, I mean, about his atheism. Yeah. And he seems like a cool guy to talk to. I don't know.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel.
Oh, yeah. He'd be an awesome guest.
He plays D&D and Warhammer.
He has a regular D&D game.
He owns a video game production company. Like, he's a big fucking nerd.
Yeah.
And I would love for someone to interview him as a nerd and not as a star, a tough guy.
My understanding is he came into that body, like, later in life. That was a post-high school type thing where that was not how
he was. I heard
a
story that he Skypes, like, of some role-playing game, pen and paper, that he's been playing with friends for like 15 or 20 years. He's got some like high-level character that he's been playing most of his life that he Skypes from shoots to play with friends.
Yeah,
like that's a fucking nerd, man.
He wasn't that ripped in Saving Private Ryan.
See,
he's very slender.
Yeah,
He got ripped out. The other one that you know we haven't mentioned that I suppose is kind of a obvious one is Penn Jillette.
Oh God, that'd be good.
Because
yeah,
you know, I don't agree with his politics at all.
Nope.
But holy fuck, he's awesome anyway.
He's a very entertaining and very talented guy, and
Penn
I feel like
Jillette is inappropriately sexual right up front.
Well, that's true.
I will say that he Facebook messaged me one time, and it
really?
Was pretty graphic.
Well,
I made a mistake. I'll say that. He said that he was keeping his Facebook for people he knows in the flesh. And I said, that's great. Maybe someday I'll meet you and I'll become among the ranks of the flesh known. I did not mean it like that, but that's what I said. And then he proceeded to look through all my pictures and tell me I looked really hot, covered in blood. And it got a little, and I was like, well, I gotta go. And he was like, yeah, I bet you do. Where are you going? I'm like, okay, though, I'm gonna leave now. I guess, for real, though.
I'm gonna go something, something husband. Yeah, it's not gonna stop me.
Yeah, no.
Maybe we'll do that one.
I would argue with
Pendulet.
Yeah.
Anyway. Are you kidding me? Do you think I don't know how to knock down a dude that's that size? Where could I possibly have learned that?
That's a great question, man. They're a dream guest. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
We've got a few.
It's on a short list.
If you know any of them.
Yeah, if anybody out there knows them, just get them in touch with us and teach us how to do this via Skype.
Tim doesn't mean in touch like that, Pendulum.
Yeah. God, it would be funny if you listened to this podcast and commented.
It's been funny for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Tweet him.
I don't think. Anyway.
Was that five?
That was five. Those were great questions. So we want to thank Mark for joining us today. He's actually going to be joining us on next week's podcast as well as the voice in the background, much as Zach was this week. So you can look forward to hearing from him again next week. We are Geeks Without God. You can find us online at many sources.
Yes.
And you can send answers to our five questions to fivequestions@geekswithoutgod.com. We will catch you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
And remember, kids, always use atheism responsibly.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
I don't even know why we have a bottle.